Hello and welcome to the Weekly Dose of Torah. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. I'm the Director of Education for the Manhattan Jewish Experience. Our Torah portion this week is the portion of Tetzaveh. This week's dose is generally sponsored by Joel Mowbray and by Tanya Freeman. Our title this week is called Presences and Absences. It takes a fair amount of work to see the things that are right in front of us. There are so many competing demands for our attention that we sometimes just send stuff to the spam folder. Who can pay attention to every email, advertisement, or headline that is shouted in our direction? We'd be paralyzed by overstimulation if we didn't choose to ignore some things. So even though we walk down the same street every day, we may not notice the names of the stores, or if there are mailboxes or fire hydrants. Unless we have a reason to notice these things, we often do not. Another reason we don't notice things is when we are too used to them. We are so accustomed to living with our spouse that we've ceased noticing, unless something reminds us, how beautiful they are. We're so used to living in a city where the garbage on the sidewalk is stacked higher than our heads, or where our sight lines are full of crisscrossing power and phone lines, that we simply don't see them anymore. A third reason we don't see things is that we sometimes do not know how to look properly. Like the guy who has a girl who's so into him and using every flirtation technique known to woman, and yet he remains blithely unaware. Or like when the answer to your problem is right in front of your eyes, but you just can't quite seem to see it. Still, it can be even harder to see things that are not in front of us. First of all, we're so distracted by the things that are in front of us, we don't have time, energy, or will to think about these other things. I'm guilty of this myself. I often tell people to send me email, though I complain about how much email I get, because when it's sitting right there in my inbox, there is a much greater chance that I will pay attention to it. It is the silent task, the hidden thing you were supposed to do, but it has not squeaked, pinged, or alerted you to the fact that it needs doing. That is the silent assassin. The quiet friend who needs your support may be overlooked in favor of the squeaky wheel. In a bad friendship, it might be easier to notice all the things that are there, outings, parties, good times, and harder to notice what's missing from it, respect, real affection, loyalty. Sometimes when something is wrong, you can have that feeling that something is missing. It just keeps nagging at you, but you can't quite put your finger on what it is. Another reason we don't see things when they're missing is that it is subtle work. A missing word can seem rather innocent until there's a bright spotlight shined on it, like noticing that the New York Times never calls Palestinian terrorists, well, terrorists. That missing word reveals more than many flowing pages of text. There's a story told about Rav Chaim of Volozhin, who was asked a halachic question the day before Pesach, Passover, by one of his congregants. The poor Jew asked the surprising question, "Can you fulfill your obligation to drink 4 cups of wine at the Passover Seder with milk?" Now one might quickly seek to respond to this question by wondering what he must have been thinking. It says wine. Or by analyzing what the details of the commandment are and whether or not it might be possible. But Rav Chaim, rather than focusing on what was in front of his face, paid attention to what was not. He gave the poor man a double portion of Passover charity, of tzedakah, even though the man had not asked for it. When asked why afterwards, he responded that anyone who asks if they can fulfill the 4 cups with milk must have no wine, must be unable to afford a bottle of wine with which to fulfill the mitzvah. The question itself was not a real halachic question. It was not a shaila. It was a plea for help from someone who lacked the basics with which to celebrate the holiday. And so it is that you probably would never notice that Moshe's name, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, is missing from this week's Torah portion. If he were mentioned 100 times, we might notice. If the Torah had someone saying, "Where's Moshe?" you might notice. But amidst all the details of the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and the clothing, and the accoutrement of the Kohanim, the priests, who would ever stop to check and see if Moshe was still with us? But he's not. To notice such a slight omission requires diligence, patience, perceptiveness, and sensitivity. Only a person who loves the Torah would notice such a thing. A person who pays attention to each nuance and turn of phrase in the Torah's words. Only a person who is looking. The Torah is not, needless to say, the New York Times or God's blog. It's not skimming material. It's deep water. The more you look into it, the more it reveals about itself. The more you look into it, the more it reveals, like the mirror of Erised or the mirror of Galadriel, about the one who looks into it. The original word for scribe should have been derived from the word for writing or for quill, but it is in fact the word sofer, which means one who counts, or possibly one who tells or reads. The ancient scribes and the Masoretes counted every word in our holy writings, how it was used, when it was used, where it was used. They were not content to read only what was written, but to be careful to notice what was there and what was not. Seeing what is missing is an act of love. In other words, there's an ongoing love affair with the Torah that goes through many stages. The passionate student of Torah will first endeavor to see what is there. Just like getting to know that beautiful and intriguing young woman or man you've just met, you will want to get to know her and spend every waking minute with her. You might start by reading through the Torah a few times in English to get the general sense of what's there. Then learn the stories and commandments of the Torah in more depth, and then learn Hebrew so you can access the original words and begin to study some of the commentaries, ancient and modern. By this time, of course, you find yourself in a deep and committed relationship with the Torah. The next step is to begin to notice what is not there. When you know your boyfriend or your spouse really, really well, you know things they don't tell you, things they don't even have to say. In Torah learning, you might start to ask, why doesn't the Torah put these stories in chronological order? Why does the Torah use this word, like the title of our Torah portion, Titzaveh, you shall command, instead of another word, like Tidaber, you shall speak? Why doesn't the Torah tell us anything about the 38 years the Jews wandered in the desert, and so on and so forth? Of course, even once you've noticed what's there and what's not there, this is not the end of the story. The deeper and longer you learn, the more you find. Once we've noticed that Moshe is not mentioned in this portion, we may have to step back and ask if this is important or not. It's certainly true, but is it important? Is there a rule that Moshe's name should be mentioned in every Torah portion? No. Are there other portions in which his name is not mentioned? Yes. Are there other reasons why it might make sense his name is not mentioned here? There are. Perhaps there is even more to this story than we thought. I, for one, think that Moshe's absence from the Sidra is striking. Not because there's some rule he should be mentioned, but because the Torah has every reason and opportunity to mention him. The first three sections of this Torah all begin with one word, Ve'ata, and you. Look in chapter 27, verse 20, chapter 28, verse 1, and chapter 28, verse 3 of Shemot, of Exodus, the very beginning of the Parsha of Tetzaveh. They all begin with the word, Ve'ata, and you. Who is this mysterious you person, Kimosavi? It's Moshe. But the more times we say, quote-unquote, you, the more we wonder why the Torah either said nothing at all. Just say, command the Jewish people. Why? And you shall command the Jewish people. Or did not mention by name and say, Moshe command the Jewish people. We may notice that the whole portion, in fact, is about Aaron and his sons, their jobs, their inauguration as priests, their clothes. And you wonder if Moshe, who is, so to speak, the 700-pound gorilla in the room, did not want to rain on his brother's parade. Why make the Sidra about Moshe when he is most considerate and content to leave it for his big brother? Finally, and most fascinating to me, is the undeniable fact that Moshe is very much present in this Torah portion. He's everywhere. The master of ceremonies, the CEO, the manager, the liaison, the event planner. It's only his name that's not absent, not him. And there is a difference. Often we might be tempted to think that when a name goes unmentioned, the person also ceases to exist. But for those who can see what is both there and not there, it's not necessary to put one's name up in lights, to say it too loudly or too often. For those who can appreciate humility, we can see that Moshe's influence is profound and constant, but he does not need his name to be front and center. It is often a mark of low self-esteem or lack of confidence to have to shout your name out for everyone to hear, lest they forget about you. It's the supremely confident and contented individual who can decline this drug. Isn't it enough if what we do in this world has the impact we seek? If we do good, are good, help others, sanctify God's name, study Torah, do acts of loving kindness, etc., etc., do we need to always get the credit? To have our names mentioned all the time, or else it's not worth anything? Moshe teaches us, and the Torah teaches us, and so subtly, that one can be there and not there at the same time. That our actions can resonate and impact without our ever being mentioned at all. Moreover, and finally, Moshe has left some absence, some blank space, some tzimtzum for others to fill, whether it's Aaron, the other members of the Jewish people, or perhaps all of us. Shabbat Shalom.